These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Where do you think people... I blanked. Go.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, right back to your calls as promised. We started out Patriots. We'll give you some Celtics thoughts coming up later on this hour as well. But Chris in the car leads us off. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Mike, I agree with you. I think one of the things you're not mentioning, and I don't know if it's really you agree, it's a factor, but social media and the 24/7 sports media is convincing the talent that they can mess with the narrative against the management. It's like when DJs were more popular and you had a million Zoo crews and it just gets sloppy. And they start doing whatever they want, and it's fun for like 6 months, and then the product goes in the toilet.
Okay, I don't quite get the analogy, and I don't totally agree that this is about modern-day media and social media. This is an old-school situation where a player is disgruntled against the coach, but not for the reasons that are being portrayed, which is sort of my point today. Brady is okay with it not being fun. He's okay with that. I know he's okay with that. He's pissed because the coach got in the way of him and his trainer, which is on a personal level how Brady gets ready to play, and that pissed him off. But also, Brady feels it's getting in the way of his business and the launch point for his lifestyle brand. That goes back to money. I think Brady also wants a contract. That goes back to money. And now it's a clash of egos, and that's what this has become. And it's become that whether there's Twitter or not. And that's what we're dealing with. So the things that Lane Johnson are talking about and Cassius Marsh are talking about, that's not Brady's issue. He's fine with the no fun thing. He's fine with it. But lumping it together, it's got to be going right up Bill's keister. It's got to be killing him.
Oh, listen, it's driving him bananas because you know that Belichick has any distraction. Like, he wants to sit there and say, "You're damn right I don't care if they don't have fun. I don't give a rat's ass if they don't have fun." But the fact that the quarterback is... Brady doesn't like the fact that Belichick is authoritarian. That's what he doesn't like, and that he always has been. And now he's revolting against it because he can't have his trainer and he can't have his contract, and Bill has power over him. And Brady, now that Bill doesn't have leverage, Brady's putting up a fight.
Here's Will in Rhode Island. Hi, Will.
How's it going, guys? First time caller. Big Eagles fan. You know, I love Lane Johnson. Performance-enhancing drugs and all, he might not have. He might not have the after post-sex glow of a Gronkowski. I'll be the first person to admit that. But faster 40 time than Anquan Boldin, higher vertical jump than A.J. Green at the combine. That's a freak.
So what are you? So is that your point? He was a good combine player?
That's all I got to say. A little add-on to all the talk about the yapping, just because you guys don't know all that much about the NFC. But I did have a blunt comment for Felger.
You know, LeGarrette Blount, we'll talk about some other time. Okay. As an Eagles fan, it doesn't bother you, and I don't even want to wait to get your answer. It wouldn't bother you to hear Johnson jump in to this conversation that was being had yesterday with another guy who was railing against the Bill O'Brien method, which is really the Bill Belichick method, and a reporter in Philadelphia, where Johnson jumps in and says all the media wants to talk about is rings. I'm going to get this ring, talking about the ring he won last year. I'm going to get this ring and never wear it one day. I'm going to put it away in a box. The only thing you're going to remember from your playing days, you're not going to remember the scores. You're going to remember the people you played with and how you felt, and that's the truth. Which is just, to me, insane.
It's also wrong for a professional athlete. It's just flat out wrong.
Johnson says, all these guys talking about, I'll take the rings. Okay, you can have your rings. You can also have effing 15 miserable years.
So you tell me Lane Johnson won't remember the Super Bowl?
Oh, God.
It's wrong. This is the part. Again, the person who says you don't remember the games is the person that doesn't have the option to play in pro sports, that sports were just a life experience for them, and they end up working, you know, being a working stiff like the rest of us out there.
He says you're not going to remember the scores.
No, it's asinine. It's asinine. You remember all the big games when you're a pro athlete. You're telling me that Joe Montana doesn't remember the Super Bowls, or that Steve Young doesn't, or the teams that lost? You don't think John Elway remembers the Super Bowls? Of course he does.
And so again, people who are lumping the Lane Johnson stuff in with what Brady's doing, you think Brady looks at that way?
No way. Not in a million years.
He's
no.
He's the polar opposite. Yet in this story and others, people are lumping in the Lane Johnson comments with Brady's absence and saying, see, there's a culture problem here. The culture wars. When the fact is, Brady could not disagree with Lane Johnson more. For Brady, it's all about the winning. All about. Or it always was. It always was. All about the winning, and that's what he's going to remember.
I want to see what happens in Philly now, because I'll tell you what, they won with the backup quarterback. Good for them. Huge accomplishment. Now they get the regular guy back. They should be better. They should. They should be able to win multiple titles here.
See which way it goes. Randy and Chicopee. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Phil. This is Randy and Chicopee. It's pretty easy to figure out, you guys. I said last year when Bill Belichick screwed the Pats in the Super Bowl that Brady would never return.
Okay, they were pissed before the Super Bowl. You understand that? They were pissed before the Super Bowl. The Seth Wickersham story came out in January. Super Bowl was February. They were pissed. Alex Guerrero got kicked off the team playing in October. Brady told Josh on the sidelines in Buffalo to go F himself in November. This was all before the Super Bowl. So the Super Bowl's given those guys a little bit of leeway, I think, giving them an opening to go after Bill because fans are pissed at him. But all this stuff predates and is much deeper than him playing or not playing Malcolm Butler. Sorry.
And Brady's coming back. When the mandatory workouts, he'll be there. Don't worry about that.
Rick and Merrimack. Hi, Rick.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Brady, to me, is now the Trojan horse that let the discontented enemy into the camp, which is eventually going to kill us. He has caused all the bad media.
Who's a discontented horse? Or who's a discontented enemy?
Pardon me?
What is the discontented enemy?
All the people who are, complaining about Belichick.
See, I would go so far as to say the discontented enemy is ego and selfishness.
Yeah, Rick, but I think you're right. Like, he's
opened the door for it.
He's opened the door for people now to question Belichick's culture and methods.
Absolutely. That's what this thing's all about. Is because it's Brady, and because Brady has credentials, everyone can look at Belichick now and says, well, your quarterback doesn't agree. I mean, if it's not Brady, everyone else dismisses it.
Is that what you're talking about, Rick?
Well, yes, sort of, yeah. But he has caused all the bad media. He's invited the rampant criticizing of Belichick. I mean, I love the guy and appreciate what he's done, but he's not lost some of my respect. And he better get us into the AFC Championship, or I'm going to blame him for this whole season.
You bet. He better be healthy and play well.
See, now that guy, to me, has it right.
It better be the exact same guy when it matters. It better be. Because I'm sorry. You've been telling me for 18 years your success in the regular season starts in the off season. So if you don't have it, you don't have the same level in the regular season, I'm going to use your words. Because you've told me, Tom, forever, it starts with the preparation. So the preparation has obviously not been the same. So that's where I'm going. He better look good and spry and young and just as strong as he always has. He better. Or else we go back to this. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. You agreed with that caller, Mason?
I do, because, again, there's a guy who understands what Brady has meant to the franchise, but at the same time says, but I've lost some respect for him because he's not acting like he normally did. There's a departure there from what his behavior has been over the first 17 years of his career. Like, I don't know how people don't see that.
Here's Devin in San Diego. Hi, Devin. Hello, Devin. Okay, babe, I kept you on hold there for too long. You can call me back, sorry. Manny in Providence. Hi, Manny.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I think you guys are looking at this all wrong. At the end of the day, Brady is a human. They're human beings. He's been doing this for so long. He's been taking Belichick's nonsense for so long, and Bill's been doing whatever he wants to do. He's letting guys that Brady needs go. He's trading guys. He's doing whatever he's doing. He was planning on trading Brady, so at some point, he's going to resent him. No matter how much winning they do, at some point, you look at a guy and you question him, and the environment does matter.
Oh, so wait a minute. So they're just doing what's best for the team, and it's all about winning? That's now secondary. That was never really the primary thing?
But if you're saying that Bill's making winning secondary, if you're going to set out one of the best corners, you see what I'm saying?
So now we're back to that. But you understand, Brady's current feeling predates Butler sitting.
And what I'm trying to say is I think that will factor into it. After it's like I look at it this way. After you put in so much work, you're doing everything you can for the team.
Okay, yeah. Phone's crapping up. Phone's
See,
crapping
it
up.
Keeps coming back to the Butler thing for this reason, that Belichick has the same flaw or made the same mistake. He made it about him. And I'm telling you that Belichick didn't do it right either. I'm not defending Belichick on that decision. Who is? But when it comes time to go back to work, what are you supposed to do? Dwell on the mistake forever?
The Seahawks did. Your Seahawks did.
Okay, but and it took him down.
So that's your model?
It took him down, Murray.
They're going down. This is it. It's over. It ended in Super Bowl 52. I'm not going to tell you otherwise. It's over. They're not winning another Super Bowl.
So I just look at it and say, okay, so, you know, because Belichick did it, that means it's okay for Brady to do it. It's okay for everyone to do it.
Yeah, eye for an eye.
Great. Well, then, you know, let's just ship them all out.
Yeah, that's human nature. He's supposed to swallow his pride and be like, oh, well, it's all well and good, Bill. Yep, I'll be there. Day one, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on what your objective is.
Yeah, if his objective now is about being right. So I side with the quarterback. He's the more important piece.
I mean, if that's his objective, then he's doing what he should do.
Okay.
If he's interested in winning, he's doing the wrong thing.
I continue to believe that this Brady thing is the lead story. I just think it's significant. You know that if you've listened to the show. It blows me away Brady's not there. So we'll be sure to hit on it all day long. But we do want to mix in some Celtics and NBA Finals, and we'll do that next, including another dirty screw job on the Celtics. You like that, Murray? You know
good.
What I'm talking about?
Oh, I like
coming
it.
Up next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Yeah, I mean, Gordon felt like he was making great strides, getting close, but he still had a little bit of pain in one little spot, persisted over the last couple months, and they felt like it was being caused by the hardware. The safest bet is him being 100% by next year. There wouldn't be lingering effects.
Another dirty screw job on the Patriots. I like that line.
Celtics.
Thank you. I even screwed it up. Another dirty screw job. So after Kyrie Irving suffers discomfort with the screw in the hardware in his knee and gets shut down for the year, Gordon Hayward gets pushed back another 2 months with something similar. Except, of course, it's in his ankle. There's
right.
a plate and some screws, and that was causing discomfort in one little place, as Ainge says. And so those are going to be removed, and he can resume basketball activities in 6 to 8 weeks. So he's set back another 2 months.
Yep.
And the Celtics writers are treating this like, oh, good news, he'll be back in 2 months. Oh, wee, good news, he'll be ready for training camp. This is great. Like, I'm like, I don't, huh?
Right, and remember, the initial report was there's an outside chance he could play late in the playoffs.
And but he's been pushed back another 2 months. So I don't know how that became good news, but apparently it is. Because the reporting on it is all, like, super positive. You know what I mean?
It really has.
Like, good news, everybody. Hayward's going to be out another 2 months. But
surgeries for all. Yay!
I don't know why that became good news, but it did.
So, see, I smell a rat.
Another 2 months. And here's what I know. The team felt he had a real chance to come back at the end of these playoffs. The team felt it. Why do you think the rumors persisted? Because there was floating going on there. They felt he had a chance to be ready at the end of these playoffs. When it originally happened, maybe as it went on, because I can see Jimmy's making a face.
Oh, I don't think there's any question.
I think as it went on, maybe they changed.
I don't. I think they counted Hayward out for, they being the team, pronouns, pal, they counted Hayward out for the year. I think Hayward and his wife were pushing for him to come back and play.
Let me tell you, when it happened early in the season, I'll tell you off the air, Jimmy. They felt he had a chance. They felt he had a chance.
Oh, I think you were lied to.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question.
Well, that's always possible.
I mean, they were. You know, I mean, that happens all the time.
That's possible.
Yeah, I mean, the sun's coming up tomorrow too, Jimmy. They were cryptic about it at the beginning, and they were for a long time. So, because they took a long time to slam that door on Gordon's not coming back.
Exactly.
So they left that door ajar, however slightly, because there was an outside shot if they made a run. And then once Kyrie was clear that wasn't going to happen, what's the point of doing anything?
And I do believe Gordon didn't want to give up the spotlight, and his wife didn't want him to give up the spotlight. And not just to the point of, you know, them tweeting out every time he made a basket sitting on a chair or something, but like to the point where he wanted in. And so now it's another 2 months.
So I smell a rat, and I'll tell you what, and I'm just trying to piece this thing together, but I have a theory on it. If you listen to Ainge's comment there, and Jimmy, maybe it's worth playing again, okay? Listen to how he says that the surgery was settled on. Listen to how he says it. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, Gordon felt like he was making great strides, getting close, but he still had a little bit of pain in one little spot, persisted over the last couple months, and they felt like it was being caused by the hardware.
Stop there. Gordon had pain. He felt it was...
They felt.
Okay, but he said, in this one little spot...
He felt he was making progress.
Right, and then they felt. Right? And no point does he say we. So, like, I hear that, because the whole thing of him getting the hardware out this fast sounds odd to me. Kyrie Irving hurt his knee in 2015. The screws didn't come out till 2 years later. And even then, sometimes, if there's no irritation, they stay in. They never come out. They just stay in there. So it feels to me like Hayward looked at it and said, no, you know, if it's a hardware thing, I don't want to have happen to me what happened to Kyrie. Like, I'm not going to get halfway through next season and then all of a sudden have to get the screws out and miss another year. So I'm getting it done now. And the team said, yeah, we don't know if we want you to do that. You know, for the health of the ankle and the stability of the ankle, it's probably better to keep those in right now. And then we'll deal with it a year from now if we have to deal with it. That's just a guess. I'm not telling you I have sources or anything else. It doesn't sound right to me.
Okay. Either way, it's just not good news that he underwent more surgery and will be out another 2 months. But that's sort of the way it's been written. Like, good news, everybody. Hayward has two more, had another procedure. He's out another 2 months, but should be ready for training camp. Great. I just don't like, oh, he had another surgery. And he's out another 2 months? Oh, okay. So just keep that in the back of your mind.
There's a real Felger way to look at this, too, that he waited this long, you know. You think he's potentially going to be a pain in the ass. You keep saying that. You allude to that in the past, that Gordon Hayward could be a problem for Stevens to deal with here going into
I just think
next season.
When we talk about egos to manage next year, I think he'll be near the top.
So maybe he waited this late because he's thinking, oh, I'm going to have to manage time with the likes of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Eh, screw them. I'll wait until the last minute to get this other surgery here, and then I'll show up when I show up.
I don't get how that's...
You think he's going to be a pain, so he could have put this off.
Be a pain by, like, being hurt for longer than he needs to be?
No.
You mean that now I have to fight for my job, so you know what, I'm taking care of me.
Oh, no.
This seems almost, like, elective. He could have waited until after next season.
That's not the kind of pain I'm talking about. Where are my touches? Where are my minutes? I'm only averaging 12 points a game. I came here to be the man. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about I'm going to shut it down because I'm pissed at the team. No. He's going to... If you need to... If you know, if they're going to... Buying into Mbutu, he's the one that I would worry about buying into Mbutu. I think he wants to be the man and wants his minutes and his shots. I don't think he'd screw around with an injury. I think he's hurt, and I think you need to keep an eye on the ankles, what I think. How do you feel about the NBA Finals tonight, Maz? Who are you rooting for?
I'm rooting for Cleveland. Because, again, to me, look, it's clear. Golden State's the heavy favorite. This thing should be a landslide. If it goes beyond five games, I'll be shocked. I'll give Cleveland one. Maybe, in Cleveland. But the reality is, it should be a sweep. It'll probably be a sweep. If it's not, it'll be five. End of story. Which is why I'm rooting for LeBron. I think that's the better story. Given the whole Cleveland departure, all of it, like, I look at it and say, I hope he wins. I'd love to see him pull it off. I think he's got about, like, a 2% chance of actually doing it. But nonetheless, I am rooting for LeBron. It would be a fabulous story if his parting gift to Cleveland was a championship. There you go. I held up my end of the deal. I took you there 4 years in a row, just like I did with Miami, and I went 2-2. Like, you know, to me, that would be a fitting end for LeBron. And I admit that as this series goes on, I may have a hard time watching. But at the beginning, because of the LeBron element, I will watch. If it starts to become a blowout, I will check out. Because who's interested in a blowout? But if LeBron can somehow make this thing interesting... To me, that's the best-case scenario for the story, for the league, for us, the whole nine yards. So I'm pulling for LeBron.
Yeah, me too, but they have no chance. I mean, the Warriors are favored by 13 points tonight. This is likely going to be a sweep. And for everybody's sake, I hope that it is. Get this over with fast.
And 13's low.
Meanwhile, LeBron had a comment that you wanted to weigh in on?
He did, yeah. And so I thought we were going to play that somewhere else. But you know what? Jimmy, go ahead and play. This was with Rachel Nichols of ESPN, did an exclusive interview with LeBron about the whole improbability of him getting to the finals. Here's what he said.
Well, the odds have not been with us all season. You know, even if you start back to the summertime when I felt like it was just bad for our franchise to be able just to trade away our superstar, you know, point guard. Obviously, I wasn't part of the communications and know what exactly went on between the two sides, but I just felt like it was bad timing for our team to just get rid of our point guard, you know, and Kyrie Irving. So, you know, I felt like the odds was against us, you know, from the summer. We just had so many things going with our team. We shuffled in different lineups. We shuffled in different players. We made a trade at the deadline. And I can't sit here right now and say that that the finals was a part of my thinking.
Okay. Agree. The finals could not have been a part of his thinking. The whole thing about Kyrie... Oh, you liar. Like, for him to say LeBron, you were the whole reason he wanted out of there, you asshat. Like, I just look at that comment as being so disingenuous. And again, I'm rooting for him. I hope he wins. But don't sit here now and tell me our franchise traded our all-star point guard and I didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't know anything about it. And maybe more the latter than the former. I didn't know anything about it. Wrong. You knew. You totally knew. In fact, the whole thing was driven by you because Kyrie gets sick of you. And he gets sick of you getting the red carpet treatment all the time. And the owner kissing your ass. And the owner get tired of it too. And ultimately, you're the one that tore it down, LeBron. You tore it down. Because you became such a high-maintenance pain in the ass and demanded so many things and held them hostage with your talent that they had no choice but to appease you and ruin the franchise. So don't sit here now and, like, wash your hands of it and say, I'm leaving Cleveland because they traded away Kyrie. No, 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 no. Kyrie left because you ruined the franchise. That's what happened. Let's not rewrite that narrative. Now, again, good for him for getting him there. He showed up in Game 7, and I'm pulling for him. But ultimately, the reason why the Cavs are in the toilet is because of LeBron.
We'll start to mix in your Celtics thoughts and a really quick Stanley Cup minute, maybe a Stanley Cup 30 seconds, right after Murray's update.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Maz.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
2 minutes to go, and a pucked up Dan Holtby watching a bad bounce out of the corner, and a shot, and a save made by Braden Holtby. Oh, my! As Alex Tuck was robbed on a puck that came bouncing out of the corner, and Washington by a whisker, still on top with 1:59 to go. My goodness, Braden Holtby.
Real quick on that hockey game last night. I didn't watch much of it. I'll be honest. Snippets. But I did turn over just before that save. 3-2 game with like a minute and a half left. Goalie pulled. And Braden Holtby, you've probably seen it by now, just makes this redonkulous paddle save. One of those ones where he reaches it on the forehand side of his paddle. And was it Tuck there who had a wide open net on a 2-on-1 off a crazy bounce? Minute left, Stanley Cup Finals, goalie pulled. Like, what a tremendous moment that was.
I mean, a little like Tim Thomas against Tampa in Game 5 of 2011, if you remember that one. Like, Downey, was that the guy?
Yes. Very
right?
Good, Mass. Very
of
good.
Tampa, who almost scored, and Thomas came out of nowhere. It was a little like that. Unreal. Unreal.
Okay,
save.
Capitals get the win. I'm rooting for them.
Me too.
Ugh. And go high, stupid. So, whoever that was, that
okay,
Tuck.
Okay, so
that's a good point, Mark.
I was going to say, and I said to Maz off the air, do I have the right to look at Tuck and go,
yeah,
you got to bury that, dude. It was just his stick and his paddle. You had the whole net.
Yes, you absolutely have the right. If it's a Bruin, that's exactly what we're doing.
Oh, we'd be ripping him all day. How do you not go bar down on that? How do you not just lift up? Not even have to go bar down. Just hit him the upper half of the net.
I mean, totally. It's totally what we would be
saying.
You had
85% of the net to shoot at, and you throw it right into his paddle.
I think he thought, there's no way the goalie gets here.
And no way.
Yeah. And he just, you know.
But if there's going to be any area where he can be, it's on that part of the ice. You know, go high.
Oh, my gosh. It was an unbelievable save.
It's so easy for us to say.
I know.
They're going right. A million miles an hour. The puck is bouncing all over the place. Like, it's not as easy as we're making it sound, I don't think.
So, you know what I loved about that whole thing? That whole finish to that game is the shot of Ovechkin on the bench with his hands over his head like, oh, my God. Like, but we came that close to being 3-3. And then after the game ended, him, you know, I say embracing Holtby, like wrapping his hand around. He spent some time there, man. It wasn't just a quick pat on the head and then, you know, skate back to the locker room. And the reason that sticks out to me, it clearly means something to him. Like, and that to me feels like a departure for Ovechkin. That this championship means something to him. He's changed.
This is to me the driving story in the series. It's Ovechkin. To me, the novelty of Vegas has sort of worn off. They're a great, great story, and there's great, you know, great reasons to root for him. A hockey story, a bigger one is Ovechkin sort of learning how to win. After all this time in the league, learning how to win. It's a good story, Murray.
Yeah, deserves got nothing to do with it. quote The Unforgiven, one of my favorite movies of all time. No, please. And he's been great in this. Did you see his power play goal last night?
Yes.
Their power play, like the Capitals power play as a whole, is lethal. Even when they're not scoring on it, how they're passing, it's like, oh my God, it is an assault.
See, and I thought that goal was underrated in terms of difficulty. The pass was in his skates. I mean, he had to pull the, you know, the blade in, and he still got a pretty good chunk of it and lifted it. Unlike the clown for the Knights.
Clown.
I mean, there really is no loss.
Can you even skate?
Barely.
There's no loss for the NHL here in terms of storylines. It's great either way. It's maybe better if the Capitals win, but I'm too dug in. I want the Golden Knights to win because I want all my Capitals friends to be upset.
Okay, so. Well, I was just going to say, the reason the Ovechkin thing is cool to me, because he's got so much talent, right? He's been the most talented player in the league for how long, or among them. And there was always just a little something missing. And at some point, effort on both ends of the complete game. And at some point in his career, he looked at it and said, I've got to give more.
It's just cool to see a guy after all this time sort of learning how to win. Like, I don't know. It's a good story. So, your thoughts on all of this. Patriots stuff, Celtics stuff, even this if you want. Mike in Rhode Island on Bill Belichick. Go ahead, Mike.
It's Belichick and Brady. There's a power struggle going on. I mean, who do you guys think the success is due to for the last 18 years? Is it Brady or Belichick?
Both, the marriage.
See, they don't think that. They each think that they're the deal.
You're right.
Belichick thinks it's him, and Brady thinks it's him. Belichick doesn't think it's Brady. He said that he could throw Garoppolo in there, and you couldn't tell the difference. And Brady didn't want Garoppolo there at all, ever. And now he's gone. Brady is like the worst employee you could ever have.
Of course.
Because he feels he's underappreciated.
This is a battle of egos. I just can't believe, Mike, they're letting it get in the way of the team. Like, Brady especially. And maybe, I don't know why I don't hold Bill to the same standard I do. I should. But just in because it's right before me. Because Bill's there. How's that? They're putting in offense. They're installing. They're getting ready for the season. And Bill's there. And Tom's not. So there's the answer to your question. That's why I'm focusing on Brady.
But also, Mike, there's a power structure. The coach has the power.
Yes, that's right.
So Belichick is supposed to have the power. There's a power structure to it there. For me, that's what it is. And up to now, don't you feel like even if they both believe that they were the reason, they've respected the other guy's place in it. Now they're not even doing that.
Well, Brady certainly isn't.
But Belichick isn't, you know, throwing Brady under the bus in that Wickersham story. Okay. Yeah, that's not respecting Brady either.
Well, that's a good point, and that's absolutely a part of it. That was a hit piece on Brady, and Bill or his people and or his people were right behind it. There's no question about it, Maz. It's a good point. Zach and Sutton on Gordon Hayward. Go ahead, Zach.
I don't know why you guys think he's such like an egomaniac. If he wanted to be the guy so bad, he would have just stayed in Utah where he was hands down the guy. But he knew that he wanted to come to Boston. He knew Brad's system, how everybody touches the ball. Nobody cares who scores. He knew they were the better team, and that's why he came. And the fact that Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Kyrie, Al, whoever's there, if the ball's still moving like Brad Stevens' system makes it move, Gordon's going to get his along with everybody else, and they're going to go on to win a championship easily.
Okay,
year.
Go Celtics, Zach. Woo-wee! Also, a guy probably thinks it's good news that he's going to miss another 2 months as he went in for a second surgery on his broken ankle. Yes, Gordon Hayward was the man in Utah and could have been the man in Utah, except he came to Boston to be the man in Boston on a better team and a bigger market. Okay? And at no point did I say egomaniac. So just like don't twist my words. I'm just telling you. One of the things that Brad is going to have to manage next year is egos. And I'm telling you, Gordon Hayward is someone I'd keep an eye on. I'm not telling you that he's nuts or a coach killer or anything like that. I'm just telling you, I think he wants his place in the spotlight. It's why he came here. Part of the reason. And yes, he can be the man in Utah and lose in the second round every year to Golden State. He could come here and be the best team in the East in a couple years. And so that's what he did.
Stevens' job is going to get harder now. I mean, there's just no way around it. You know, up until now, the Celtics have been a good story. Even in the playoffs this year, they were a good story because they had the injuries. They've always been the little engine that could on some level. And now they're not the little engine that could anymore. They are a locomotive, man.
Okay, again, we gave you yesterday Brad Stevens after 2 days of considering the Game 7 loss. What were his impressions of what went on at the end of the game? Danny Ainge did the same thing this morning on Touch and Rich. I want to give you his reaction to how the Celtics handled the end of that game and give you our thoughts on it. Continuing with your calls, it's our long commercial-free segment, and it begins next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Can you explain why Jason Tatum didn't get more touches near the end of the game?
When you watch basketball, when a guy gets going and a guy gets hot, and they were doing this even throughout the game, it's not always that easy. I mean, some of it is on Jason, some of it's on the other guards or the decision makers. But, I mean, if you look at the shots we got, they're shots we took all year and shots we made all year. And, wide open looks from other players and guys that have scored all season long. So, we're not going to just strictly go to Jason. And when, the defense picks up, you got to be able to go to someone else. I mean, Jason, as good a player as he is and as good a player as he was in Game 7, it's not like we're just going to get the ball to Jason Tatum like he's LeBron James and, think that he's going to be able to go score every time. We did it as a team all year, and we were running the same offense, and we were getting the same shots, very good quality shots.
Well, just picking up on our conversation from yesterday, it's really more of the same. I don't expect Danny Ainge to rip his coach. I would like one of these guys to say we could have had some better shots in there. It was 79 points.
See, they love those threes, man. They do. They love them.
So maybe it's just an NBA thing. The whole NBA needs an intervention with the three-point ball. But Ainge's comment there. why? How come Tatum didn't get more shots down the stretch of that Game 7? Sometimes it's on Jason, he said. Sometimes it's on others. Okay, he says they're good shots. Shots we've hit all year. But we're not just going to give the ball to Tatum like he's LeBron James and ask him to score every time. Why not? Why not?
That was sort of my initial reaction. And I think what he's saying there is...
If he's going. I mean, when Isaiah Thomas was going last year, he got the ball every trip down the floor.
Right. And so what I think he's saying there is Tatum's not ready for it. I'm interpreting it that way.
I don't know. He looked pretty ready when he dunked on LeBron's face and then hit a three.
Okay, so now whether or not you agree with it, like what I would say is, I don't care. It was your best shot. he's your best chance at a one-on-one scorer. And I am a believer in that in those games, those kind of monster games, oftentimes at the end they become a one-on-one duel. That's what they become. And that the best player is confident in his ability to beat someone one-on-one and score. And again, I go back to the year they won their last championship. They played Cleveland in the second round that year, and what happened? LeBron versus Pierce. They had Garnett. They had Allen. They had all kinds of players on that team. Posey, Eddie House, you know them all. And yet, Game 7 of that game became LeBron against Pierce.
LeBron had 45. Pierce had 41 that game.
Okay, now, again, a big hoop in that game, maybe the biggest, was P.J. Brown. But even so, the point being that the majority of the time, even Garnett said it after the game, if you remember, he started humming the Superman theme, remember? All of that. And I think that this game called for that. I think to me it was...
If not the game, how about just down the stretch when no one else can put it in the ocean except for one kid and the kid doesn't get the ball?
I'd have given it to Tatum and gotten out of the way. That's what I would have done. Let Tatum beat someone and let him score.
But this hyper defense from Steven and Ainge of their approach, I just... And they kept going back to, well, I watched Houston the next night and they were even worse. Well, that doesn't make you right because someone else was dumber. Doesn't make you, because you were less dumb, doesn't make you, it was, those were actually good shots because someone took worse shots. Danny Ainge continued.
What I'm saying is that Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown had 27 and 28 points in a brutally difficult environment in Cleveland in Game 6 and carried us. And nobody else could make a shot. And then in Game 7, Jason was our offensive guy, Al Horford early in the game, and Jason Tatum were our hottest offensive players. And typically down the stretch of games, teams pick up and they defend those guys with more force and more focus, and someone else has to step up. And that's just the way the game goes a lot of times. And I think that everybody it's fair criticism. It's fair to second guess all those things and have those opinions. But, I mean, the reality, you can say the same thing with Houston's loss, and we'll be saying the same thing in the NBA Finals loss. Is why didn't this guy touch the ball, or why didn't LeBron pass the ball? He's so hot. Why did he pass the ball to J.R. Smith for the open three, or Jeff Green for the open three? Those guys happened to make it. We didn't make it. That happens. That's basketball.
Okay. Reception a little poor there, but I just wanted to play it because it just is a continuation of this hyper defense of their approach at the end of that game, which I would love to hear one of them say, Stevens, Ainge, some of them say, yeah, we've looked at it and there were some things we could have done better there. Because it's just a natural human thing. Like, I don't know. I just think it's too defensive. Too defensive when you clearly failed. 79 points. Only one game, though. All of you had less than that. So something went wrong there. It's okay to acknowledge it. Like, that's how you get better from it.
See, once you didn't get it from Stevens, I knew you weren't going to get it from Ainge. And I say that because then he's second-guessing his coach.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, to me, he was going to take a certain approach that way. And I don't know, maybe internally they do disagree on it, but they've taken a public stance on it. I just think, in that moment, go with the hot hand. Like, that is, who are you most confident in to score? Like, that's the way I look at it, is it becomes a big moment. Who do you trust the most? Like, in any big spot, in any big sporting, who do you trust? And to me, at that moment, I'd have trusted Tatum.
There were definitely some possessions that called for it. There's no question about it. But I will acknowledge again, it's more than just a Celtics problem. It's a league problem. Whatever analytics operation or whatever set of nerds has gotten it in these guys' heads that the three is a more efficient thing. It's just they've just taken it too far. When Steven said to Beadle and Zoe yesterday that the offensive rebound kickout three is the best shot in basketball, he said that. And when he says best, I think that what he means is the data shows that that's the most efficient shot or the most productive shot in baseball, basketball on a percentage basis or a volume basis is the offensive rebound kickout three.
Because that guy's wide open.
When that becomes the best shot in basketball, something's gone a little wrong with your sport. I think it's just taking it too far.
Right. How about a dunk?
To the point where, so that's why, because the analytics show that that's the best shot in basketball now. When the Celtics have that opportunity at the end of the Cavaliers game and they're getting offensive rebounds off of free throws and offensive rebounds off of misses, they're sending it out to the line and just chucking it up wildly because that's what they're encouraged to do because that's what the data shows. Like, I hate that. Like, is the league just being driven by this data now? And this is why we get all these bad shots and this crazy just bombs away approach from the three-point line.
I mean, basketball might be worse than any other sport when it comes to that, I'm including baseball.
Well, embracing the analytics, they've gotten goofy about it.
Yes, and I say that because the whole three-point phenomenon.
Do you know how many basketball nerds like B-Rob and Jones and these guys are walking around with their pants off and a basketball over their heads going over their efficiency ratings and their per 100 possession numbers and the combinations on the floor? That sport has nerded out so bad. It's unbelievable.
Lineup of death.
And look, the lineup of death. Thank you. And even in the lineup of death, there is a guy who takes the last shot, right? Or who they trust the most, which is
closer.
Durant is my point. Like that, even in those moments, the consummate team.
I didn't see that in this series.
Durant?
I saw them bombs away.
Golden State.
Yeah, and sometimes they went in, sometimes they didn't.
Well, we saw it in game one. I mean, Durant was not nails in game one. But that aside, like the whole three-point thing in basketball is built on math. It's all math.
It's math.
Oh, it
get
is.
Get it out of sports. Get math and nerds out of sports.
Nerds, the whole idea is if you take six shots inside the arc and you make three, that's 6 points. But if you take them outside the arc, you only have to make two.
Ugh.
Right? So that's what it is. It's all about the percentages.
Oh, it's so bad.
Find these people and seal them in a cave forever.
I mean, it's...
Stay away from sports.
Right. Who needs to shoot 50% when we can shoot 33 and get the same number of points?
So
we're being more efficient.
Like, I think in general, the three-point line has opened up the game and helped the game. Like, in general, like where we came from, like in the 90s when it was just really defensive and it really mucked and grinded. And I think I've said this a million times that the regular season NBA product might have never been better than it is right now. It's wonderful regular season product. Tremendous talent, wide open play, great movement, and I think the 3-point line's been a big part of that. But in these playoff games, when you got to have it, when you got a slow momentum, or you get into a situation, it's a situational thing, but you're still just going to say, nope, the kickout three on the offensive rebound is the best shot in basketball, according to the data.
Clang.
And you're just going to keep
clang.
Watching? Like, it's gone too far.
Well, no, like anything, there's a tipping point. There's a tipping point where it becomes stupid or it becomes counterproductive. And so, like, I looked this up the other day. The Celtics were 378, I think, or something like that from three-point lane during the regular season. Second best in the league. Only Golden State was better. In the playoffs, the number was 343. So do you still want to be taking them at the same pace? And by the way, that 343 have ranked 29th during the regular season. Just to give you an idea how much of a drop that is.
Yeah.
Just 4 percentage points, right? But once they were all of a sudden going in that much less than they were during the regular season, is it still worth taking them at the rate you take them?
So this is what I'm telling you. This is why you lost the game. You fell in love with the three and just kept launching. And if Cleveland has any chance of pulling a miracle here, that'll be what does in Golden State, that they get in these games and just bombs away, bombs away, bombs away, bombs away. And just naturally, you're going to go cold a couple of those nights, and who knows? So I think there's got to be an intervention in the entire... Someone's got to take the nerds, duct tape them, duct tape their mouths shut, take away their pocket protectors.
Their abacuses.
Take them out back.
Abacai.
Maybe slap them in the face with a moist sausage.
Damp.
Damp sausage.
Put them back in the basement where they belong and just go to them occasionally. Like, they just got to reset a lot. I think they fall. I think the basketball people have listened a little bit too much to the nerds.
Slap them with a steamed wiener.
So here's an update from Jim Murray. 90 seconds. No commercials. We come back with your phones on the Brady situation, the Celtics, whatever you want. Don't go anywhere.
Touchdown! Score!
Boston's home for sports is WBZ-FM and HD Boston, 98.5 The Sports